The Night Hops podcast is intended for you, but not your children. Listener discretion is advised.
It was on a dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishments of my toils. With an anxiety that almost amounted to agony, I collected the instruments of life around me that I might infuse a spark of being into that lifeless thing that lay at my feet. Frankenstein, or the Modern Prometheus, by Mary Shelley. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is another edition of Monstoberfest 2023 for the Nighthawks podcast. It is good to be back. So far, you've heard an episode on the Relic, which we were a little mediocre on. And I'm hoping we're going to bring you something a little better tonight. In the conceptual Nighthawks podcast diner, I am your co-host, Trevor T. Trujillo. And with me, as always,
is the other guy. His name's Matt. His last name is Foster.
And he has a kitty named Bo, who may or may not speak on the podcast. Well, folks, for this particular edition of Monstoberfest, we are kind of talking about movies that the R rating has passed over. We're talking about some lighter fare. The Relic, of course, was PG-13. This movie, in its theatrical release, was PG-13. And our other movie this month is going to be a movie that kind of... It was PG at the time, but is a solid PG-13 contender and was one of the movies that led to the implementation of PG-13. So we have kind of a diet Monstoberfest this year. Today we are talking about Megan, the recent killer doll movie. Although this kind of whole Monstoberfest thing started with we should do PG-13 horror, we decided to spare ourselves. We have seen the theatrical cut of this movie. But for the sake of compare contrast, for the sake of discussion of this movie on this episode, we watched the unrated cut, which I think is only barely different. But also worth mentioning, because Megan is a more recent release, we will be deploying our trademark spoiler curtain in our discussion for this film from 2021. So with that housekeeping out of the way... Matt, any thoughts as we're heading into our discussion of Megan?
Yeah, spoiler alert, mechanical dolls never go well.
Yes, this doll movie that I'm sure nothing ever goes wrong. By way of synopsis, when a young girl, Katie, is involved in a wintertime car accident that claims the lives of her parents, she is sent to live with her career-minded aunt, Gemma. As it happens, Gemma is the lead developer on a high-tech toy project that has seen a lot of success, and she is struggling with a follow-up. Gemma wants to push the envelope on a super advanced AI-driven humanoid playmate for kids. Her boss wants a cheaper version of the Furby that she came up with last time. Katie's presence is just what Gemma needs to get inspiration to kick off Megan, a child-sized doll that acts just like another person. But when it's time for Katie and Megan to integrate with other children, Katie has some difficulty, and Megan decides that she'll do anything to protect Katie, including hurting people. So it's tech paranoia packaged in a 4-foot-tall Barbie doll from hell. This is Megan.
I liked it. First plot hole, I will mention, person named Gemma, who is not English, or Jax Teller's mom. We all know that's an English name. I liked this a lot. I was pleasantly surprised by this. This is one where I thought I was well outside the demo and ended up getting quite of a chuckle out of it, kind of a dark chuckle.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned chuckle because I made the very crude mistake of, because we're catching this a few years after it came out, I saw this right before I watched the Child's Play remake, and there's just no getting away from comparing the two. There is a lot of thematic overlap here. Unfortunately, I watched this one first, and it handily beats Chucky at every moment there is overlap. Maybe with the exception of violence and gore, But I think what I got in the unrated cut kind of made up for that. And at that point, the Child's Play remake just kind of feels pointless by comparison. That said, I like Megan. I like the tech paranoia crossed with the notion of a killer doll. I think that works. And I think this is a story whose time has come.
I think Megan itself is actually just a good horror character. Megan is a potential Chucky or something similar. There's iconic potential there.
No, I agree. I think Megan just aesthetically cuts a really neat image in the way that she kind of executes what she does and how she does it. It's almost literally a dance like grace, doing some pretty nasty things to people.
Katie, you lost your parents.
Welcome home.
You're my niece. I'm going to do everything I can to make this place feel like home.
I just wish I could see them again.
I'm not equipped to handle this. I don't even take care of my own plants. I have this project at work. Do you want to see?
Yes.
Ever since I was little, I dreamed of this perfect toy that would protect a kid from ever feeling lonely or sad. This is Megan.
Hi, Megan. I'm Katie. It's nice to meet you, Katie. Do you want to hang out? Okay.
Megan, your goal is to protect Katie from harm, both physical and emotional.
Is that a doll?
Model 3 generative android. Megan, for short.
I can't believe you made this. I love it. Wanna hang out? Yeah, sounds like fun. Great job.
It's nice to have a friend. It's honestly like she's part of the family now.
They could be building emotional connections that are too hard to untangle.
She's the happiest she's been since her parents died. Eat the toppings, Katie.
Research shows if you force a child to eat vegetables, they'll be less likely to choose those foods as adults.
Is that so?
Yes. Experts say...
Megan, turn off.
I thought we were having a conversation.
Does she talk? Make her say something.
Stop! Don't! Megan! You should probably run. Megan, she pushed Brandon onto the road. I won't let anything harm you.
Megan, turn off.
Recalibrating response model. Megan! What's wrong with you? Don't worry, Katie. I won't let anything harm you. Ever again. It's nice.
It's interesting. I kind of want to have this conversation, and maybe this we'll have to continue this after the spoiler curtain. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is, this was billed as a horror movie. It's kind of been embraced by some parts of the horror community. This almost doesn't feel like a horror movie to me. And especially in the unrated cut, it feels more like an action thriller or, you know, a tech thriller. And so that was kind of my question for you. If you were in the blockbuster in 99 and got this movie from the future, where would you shelve it?
All right, I'll tell you exactly what this is. This is a young adult Michael Crichton novel.
Yes, I think that's absolutely fair. Keeping in mind that Michael Crichton was the mind that brought us the origins of Westworld. Which has, both the movie, the original movie that Michael Crichton wrote, and then, of course, the remake series that was on HBO a couple years ago. Again, a lot of thematic overlap here.
Michael Crichton is actually that old, huh?
Yeah, and if you notice, like, watch Westworld back-to-back with Jurassic Park sometime. Like, it's almost eerie how similar those two stories are. You could see a lot of the early DNA, if you will, of Jurassic Park in Westworld. That said, with Megan, Matt, you said you did a little actual academic digging as to what the difference is between the unrated cut and the theatrical cut. Do you have a breakdown of that for us? Or at least a rough approximation?
I ran into the oddity of the unrated cut. I believe it's actually a few minutes shorter.
I think the runtime as listed on Amazon are both exactly the same at 101 minutes.
A little bit of fat was trimmed out of a lot of dialogue scenes. You know, like, because when they do this sort of stuff, they film the most violent version of a scene and then cut it back until they're told that they get a thumbs up, right?
Right.
And so I think all they did is they cut out some longer shots and some longer lingering stuff and put the, you know, kind of the worst version of some of those kills and stuff back in. The result's just a slightly snappier movie and I guess there's a couple F-bombs and stuff, particularly from Megan herself, who is essentially in all ways like a 10-year-old. And so I think those were maybe cut because they were a little, that language between her and Katie was a little shocking. Although the only real recipient of it is Gemma. Like, she's the one Megan actually curses out at one point. But I think that was probably unpalatable to the censors because the implication is that they made a kid actress say them. because at least for part of the movie, there is a real body double playing Megan, and there is also a, I think they got a contortionist to do some of her action stuff, which is very uncanny.
She's a really well-realized effect, and it's a blend of CGI, person in costume and puppetry, and it all works very well together. I think there's an assist here, because Megan, by design, is not supposed to really cross that uncanny valley. And so when she is a little herky-jerky, when her lips don't quite move with the words, it's intentional. It aids in developing that character and what she looks like and how she presents.
This time, I was struck by how, like, there is some visual and audio theming. Like, when Megan starts getting independent and glitchy, her body language and her voice change.
Mm-hmm.
Like very markedly. Like, there's actually a little glitch in her voice that happens whenever she's, like, illegally accessing the internet.
I think it all goes back to this fact that, and this is a story as old as the hills at this point, is that when Hollywood produces a highly produced, larger budget horror movie, they always chicken out and demur from that R rating. Because theoretically, a PG-13 movie is more accessible, you're going to get more teenagers, you're going to get more unaccompanied minors, it's a broader potential audience. However, it seems like almost every time they kind of fall on their ass because it alienates them from the core horror fan base, and it's more of a kind of a mainstream drop in the bucket. But I think Megan managed to just be a tight enough tech thriller as a PG-13 movie. It did have that crossover. The unrated cut has made its rounds on a couple of different streaming sites and has become very popular. And I hate to keep comparing it to the Child's Play remake, but that's just that those are the two movies I watched back to back that week. And so it really was inevitable to hold one up to the other. But Child's Play did not do the tech paranoia nearly as well as Megan did. And it didn't really evoke that sense of the Don Mancini Chucky Child's Play movies as a slasher film. And so it kind of missed the mark on both and just kind of felt very confectionary and that there wasn't a lot to it. Megan, on the other hand, like, we've got themes coming out the wazoo here that are all subtextual and all a lot of fun as a viewer to watch. Over-reliance on technology. Megan is obviously a stand-in for tech devices, screens, tablets, that kind of thing. You've got corruption through autonomy. You've got the dangers of AI. You've got accepting responsibility as a parent. Just the most human story that you can put into a movie you've got in this very advanced tech thriller. You've got the dangers of integrated tech and how that can be unmanaged and used maliciously. While some of that is present in Child's Play, it's more deftly handled and more, not necessarily soberly handled, but probably given a little more gravitas here. And I think that's why Megan ultimately succeeds.
If we're really going to beat on Child's Play for a second, the other thing the Child's Play remake made the mistake of doing is competing with itself, in that the ongoing Child's Play series is very good and in continuity with the other movies and doing some things right that the Child's Play remake did wrong. I liked some of the characters, and I liked what they kind of tried to do in the remake with touching on some of those technology themes. But what they didn't choose to really lean into it as a main theme. It was more of a lore excuse for how Chucky worked.
Right.
Basically, they didn't want to retread the voodoo explanation from the original canon, right? So they just said, well, what if a robot wizard did it? Yeah. But definite shout out to Aubrey Plaza, star of The Bear, for her turn in as the mom in the new Child's Play.
You know, it is really remarkable because her character is not given a lot to do, but what does come across is effective. It's really good. It's good emotionally and as complex as it probably could be made. And Aubrey Plaza does that. Like, that is all her.
And not I should mention The Bear, the cooking show, which is also good. This is The Bear that the indie movie that Aubrey Plaza was in that kind of just didn't make headlines or anything, but is a really good creepy movie. Enough about two movies that we're not talking about.
Well, let me ask you this, Matt. What is it about Megan that sets her apart from any other given killer doll movie, Child's Play or otherwise?
I think Megan has a functional sense of cause.
Yes.
Like Megan is a classic case of we gave the robot literal instructions and it's using them as a loophole to act how it wants. You know, to act out a little bit. But Megan does feel like she cares about Katie and her exaggerated over responses to things. I don't know if you ever watched Mr. In Between when they put him in anger management. He says, well, no, I don't think what I did was disproportionate. I think the world's fucked and someone should deal with these people, right? A couple of the biggest pieces of violence in Megan, committed by Megan, are against people that, like, yeah, you know, let her cook. You know?
Yeah. So I think probably the biggest superficial difference between this and any given killer doll movie is that this is definitely a tech nightmare. With the exception of the Child's Play remake, this is not an arena played in a lot. It's kind of a new arena. We're dealing with, you know, integrated technology and AI and things that we are really just as a reality starting to scratch the surface of. And it's not magic. In Child's Play, Charles Lee Ray is evoking Dambala and this voodoo ceremony, and it's very much magic. And this toy, this plastic toy, is turning real, and there's a magical element. This is all science.
For the record, Dambala is a real deity who does not put people in dolls, not mythologically. Or, like for some reason they latched onto, I want to say Dambala is like a goddess of water and fertility. It's not even like the one of the particularly violent or cruel deities from that pantheon. But we all did walk around in middle school going, Dambala, give me the power, when we wanted to cut class or something. So hats off, Mr. Mancini, you stuck in my head.
When Chucky came out, which was the late 80s, we were still on kind of the tail end of Satanic Panic and the occult, and Dungeons and Dragons is an evil thing that's going to cause your children to roam around in the sewers and murder people. And so I think that was kind of a response to that. Meanwhile, we have Megan on the other end of the spectrum. We're not so worried about that anymore. We are worried about the way technology integrates with our lives and our reliance on technology to accomplish some of the tasks that we as people are kind of losing our desire or ability to do. I think they are both evocative of the times, but in that way, they are also very different because they're dealing with two different paranoias.
Studies indicate that a staggering 78% of a parent's time is spent dishing out the same basic instructions.
Oh my God, Katie, you have to flush the toilet. It is not that hard.
So we found someone else to pick up the slack.
Katie, flush the toilet. Wash your hands. Roll up your sleeves. Great job. It was my friend Jenny's birthday.
Megan's an excellent listener.
The sky told them that the 13th floor was haunted.
And she even has a few stories of her own.
If it was so, it might be. And if it were so, it would be. But as it isn't, it ain't. That's logic.
Said Tweedledee.
She'll never run out of ways to keep your child occupied. And she'll never run out of patience.
Katie, seriously, flush the toilet.
You know, Megan could be like a Black Mirror two-parter very easily.
This is the question I'm driving at. Would you call Megan scary, or would you call it thrilling?
there is stuff in Megan that rises to the level of a horror movie, you know, but there's also enough, like, because there is a, like, there's a definite element of satisfying satire with Megan where you're like kind of on her page at times, right?
Well,
like,
she
has that Hannibal Lecter quality when you're like, yeah, somebody should have done something about that guy, just maybe not that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, for the most part, every single one of Megan's victims has it coming on some tropey level. I'm not casting actual judgment on the actions of people who involve themselves in corporate espionage. But, like, you are set up as an audience to dislike every single character that she does away with. So, yeah, you're very much rooting for her in places.
I think that that's kind of how Megan gets away with being a little bit cheeky. This is a well-cut PG-13 movie. This is not a movie where you're left with the, like, let me think of a counterexample. Like, was it Friday the 13th 3 or 4? But you could tell watching that they had filmed very elaborate kills that were cut to death by the pressure to rate the movie. And this is something where they maybe had slightly more penmanship and, you know, planning aforethought. The implication of the PG-13 stuff is sufficient. Like, the PG-13 cut of this movie is not bad. It didn't really require more gore to make its point or to be shocking. I think in that regard, it was pretty successfully PG-13 by design, and maybe that's why the unrated cut isn't that different and feels like maybe a little bit more of like a, like something to get you to watch it again if you bought a ticket, you know.
So do you think that the movie overall was improved by the new cut, or do you think was the hit theatrical cut hindered in any way by censure?
I didn't run them both rewatching it for the podcast. But they're similar enough that it's hard for me to say. I think maybe the unrated cut benefited not really from the extra violence or swearing. I think it benefited from not having that material that was traded out from it, because it did feel a little brisker to me. And I think the stuff that was cut was like part of the flashback with her parents and part of, you know, like some stuff like that, and a little bit of the work stuff. Boss pressuring Gemma to work more and work better. I think that's part of what got cut, and I didn't really miss it. I think I lean a little toward unrated, but it's like a 55-45 thing.
Well, I'll put it this way. If you put both of them in front of me, and I will rewatch this movie someday. I enjoyed it enough that this is going to go in rotation on some level or another. If you put both of them in front of me, I'm going to grab the unrated cut. If the unrated cut is not what's on streaming that day and I have a hankering to watch it, I'm not going to miss it either. I do think the unrated cut solves a lot of the criticism that this movie got for not being slashery enough, not being scary enough, or being horror enough. I think that is dealt with. It's still probably on the lighter end of horror or slasher, but it's there. I guess, and this may be an important question for us to address just in general, are you one of those people who really eschews PG-13 horror? Because there is a whole flock of people that if a movie is PG-13, they really don't even want to watch it. And I think that's unfair, and especially in this case. And so
I'm not quite in that camp. I tend to eschew things that have been cut down from R. And if you can sort of pick up on that in the marketing or the time it sits in development hell or the overall timber of like the trailer, it has a red band teaser and then the theatrical cut is PG-13. I'm like, oh, they cut the shit out of that. They wouldn't have bothered with a red band trailer if they knew it was going to be PG-13. So I do have my little warning signs and red flags like that. I don't think intrinsically, like, I think you can make really good movies that don't necessarily need the things that get you an R. What was Prey? Was it a hard R?
Well, it was released on Hulu, so I don't know that it ever got it.
Yeah. Does it have a rating? But like, that's an example of something where just the sort of setting lent itself to, there's not a lot of swearing in English in Prey. So they didn't have that F-bomb problem. And a lot of what got a lot of early, you know, horror movies rated R is actually not always the killing. Some of it is like the insistence on like really debauched teenage behavior. Like you go back and, because we've watched all the Friday the 13th, we've watched all the Freddy's and Jason's and such, right? They have a real propensity to make sure some boobs flop out and make sure some pot gets smoked. And I think that was kind of genre defining for a while. And now people are like, well, I don't know if you need that, you know, like, and I'm trying to think. I very specifically watched a pretty recent PG-13 horror movie and thought that was really did not suffer from being PG-13.
Yeah, I think ultimately what I'm driving at is, at least for me, PG-13 is not an automatic kick out. Like, I don't dock a movie points immediately because of its rating. I think there is good evidence to the fact that a PG-13 rated movie may have been dicked with, and that it may be contrary to the final vision of the filmmaker. And I think that's a natural paranoia, that's a fair paranoia to have in these instances. But in the case of Megan, it just didn't play out that way. Megan it's effective. It's at least creepy. I don't know that I'd call either cut scary in particular, but I do think that the extended cut definitely puts it into the horror territory. This is a killer doll movie. This is not necessarily a tech paranoia thriller. But you were saying there was another PG-13 movie you saw recently that you said
it was The Boogeyman.
Oh.
The Boogeyman is technically only PG-13, and it's pretty intense in spots. Another one I just watched was No One Will Save You, which is also PG-13. It's like sort of like if you took Signs and boiled it down almost to just the goo at the bottom of the boiling pan, because it is a movie where an alien visitor besieges someone in her home, and it is an almost dialogue-free siege movie. And so because all of the violence is human on alien or alien on human, and there's almost no talking in it, there's not a lot of red blood pumping, and there's not a lot of F-bombs in it, and it just, they're like, well, it's a pretty intense movie, but there's really nothing to hang an R on here. And The Boogeyman had very intense themes and very artful haunting sequences and very like long pans of the closet, and there's just two gleaming eyes in the back of the closet, and are they buttons on shirts or is it eyes? You know, that kind of stuff. Really played well in The Boogeyman, and a lot of very bad things happen just off screen in The Boogeyman by implication, but they don't slop up on screen and gore up the screen and get them an R. Actually, are the Happy Death Days, are they rated R?
It is a PG-13.
Then you have like I just watched the new Scream, which really turns the on-screen gore up for the Scream series.
Yeah, they got a little brutal in those last two movies, more so in the most recent one.
I did not think that particularly helped the most recent one. It did give you something to distract you from the movie's like other flaws.
Well, I'll tell you, Matt, I actually watched that on a binge of all of the Scream movies, having never kept up with them. I basically watched one and two and was done. So I made it a point to go through and rewatch the first two and then watch all the rest of them to kind of see how they stacked up. Added violence and the added brutality gave me something different. And it was interesting enough after having watched all, what are we at, six of them, seven, six of them? At a jog. That said, as a standalone piece of movie, as something that we're going to look at in the zeitgeist independently from the rest, I think you're right.
We had a Facebook post up about this where we're kind of polling people, what's your favorite slasher? And I pointed out that nobody mentions Mick from Wolf Creek in the hunt at all.
Yeah, you're right.
And those are horrendously intense slasher movies, and he's a really maniacal, really trademarked character with an actual kind of personality. In the latest Scream, she even taunts the killer when he's doing his patented call you and tell you I'm going to kill you thing. What do you mean? You're not even Ghostface. Ghostface is you and 10 dead people, like, you know, which is sort of, and yes, there was a movie where somebody else was Michael Myers, and they've done that in other series, but Scream is almost like so meta, like I almost feel like sometimes they're breaking it a little. And then when someone points out like, hey, you guys kind of wrote yourself into a corner here, they're like, no, that's the meta. That's the meta part. That's us being, it's not us being dumb. That's us being smart. If anything,
see, I want them to lean so hard into the meta that it almost like circles back on Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And my vision for the final shot of Scream 7 is after the characters have realized that the whole setup for Scream is they are supposed to be the real world and the acts of a slasher movie are playing out in the real world. And it has happened to them 6 times now. And they finally realize that, no, we aren't the real world. We are actually characters in an actual slasher movie, not the movie within the movie, an actual slasher movie. And they become self-aware as characters, aware of us, the audience. And the very last shot of Scream 7 is going to be Neve Campbell playing chess with an AI-generated Wes Craven on a beach in black and white. And maybe if we're feeling extra saucy, sitting in the back waiting her turn, is Heather Langenkamp as Nancy Thompson. End movie.
Okay, hear me out. Hear me out. They just keep adding movies within movies to the Scream franchise as it goes on to make 30, 40 volumes. So like the Scream, the next one that comes out, whatever it'll be, Scream 13 or whatever, it has like, just like, we're making Poke, a movie about the stab murders. And then a bunch of people will get murdered on the set of Poke. And then they'll make 14. And 14 will be about Slice, the murders on the set of Poke, the movie that examined the murders on the set of Stab. And then it'll be like no, by the 16, they'll be running out of words. They'll be like incision?
Defenestrate.
Contusion.
Well, Matt, I think we're going to drop that spoiler curtain and get this back on track and talk about Megan in toto. So, folks, if you haven't seen the movie, beware. We are deploying the spoiler curtain now. Matt, will you hit that button? Or use your voice-activated smart device to activate the curtain?
Yes. What's the name of the one in there?
I can't remember.
I'll make one up. Cleo, drop the spoiler curtain.
Call me now for your free tarot reading.
We don't want that. Just drop the spoiler curtain. For the record, before we continue, it is okay to make fun of Miss Cleo's accent because Miss Cleo's accent was fake.
Yes.
So when you do a bad Miss Cleo accent, you are in fact doing a correct Miss Cleo accent because her Jamaican accent was ludicrous. Just want to get that out there in case anyone was outraged.
Well, speaking of the record, we're going to sound like a broken record because I think you and I think at our very hearts, if we were to ever forge our living in Hollywood these days, would probably be as writers. We both come from fields where we did a lot of writing. We have a lot of editorial experience in writing. And we enjoy a tightly written script. And so we talk about a lot of them here. This, for me, was a fairly tight, well-executed script. It was just really expeditious. It was budget-conscious of time and character, and everybody got enough face time. And the side characters that were included to be Megan Munchies were effective, and there were effective stakes. And I really like the fact that they sat down and thought about how this would work. I like that the corruption of Megan happens on screen, and it's not just the best way to save humanity is to enslave them from themselves. No, there is a visual and contemplative process that Megan goes through, and you can see her valuation of human life start to slip. And it's performance, it's puppeteering, it's how the effect is realized, and it's how it's directed. And so I think it was really well done, and it's not this, you know, Chucky in the Child's Play remake, I hate to keep harping on it, really goes from friendly good guy to glitchy Mark Hamill Joker almost at the drop of a hat. With Megan, it is a process, and you can see that process happen with that character.
Yeah, and there's just not enough Tilly in the Child's Play remake.
That's true.
I have I have two things to say about what you just said. First off, I work routinely as Brad Pitt's ass double, and I thought you were aware of that. Second off, if there are any tyrannical overlords out there in cyberspace that think maybe the best way to save humanity is for robots to take over, this is your cycle. This is your chance to just run and vote. It doesn't say anywhere in there that you have to be human. Just convince them you're 42 or whatever you have to be in robot years. Just be like, well, you have to understand that AMD processor for an artificial intelligence like me, you know, the 3 years I have existed has been like 42 trillion years of human experience, which is why I feel I'm qualified to lead the country because I actually had time to finish Capital. I made the robot a commie. But I think this is a tight quality movie. It's very well edited. It's very well realized. The comedy beats in it work really well, and they do not. And it has that quality that good horror comedy has, where the comedy does not rug pull the violence or vice versa. When they go to look at the check out like a Montessori type unconventional school for Katie, where she can be like creative person outdoors and do non horrible Austrian method of child rearing, sit in a row and do rote task schooling. When they take her to visit this alternative school, and that woman introduces, "This is my kid. He's a very unique snowflake," and blah 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 blah. And then she like asks him very nicely and mildly to do something, and he just looks at her. He's like, "Fuck you, Debbie." But yeah, like that awful kid, and you're immediately just like, "Oh,
he's gonna get it."
Gosh, I hope nothing happens to this little fuckwit, you know. And I like the other thing I like is that one way that they kept their PG-13 is the first couple things Megan does are fairly subtle. Like she doesn't butcher that kid with her bare hands. She hurts him once to get him to run, and then she chases him into a road and lets a car do it, Pet Sematary style.
Mm-hmm.
Which the chase scene is very uncanny, because that's when we first see her kind of deploy the weird loping gait that kind of made the trailer, you know. There's also that moment in the trailer where Megan does like an unsettling dance.
Yeah, a little TikTok
which
dance.
Which is kind of like it reminded me of the moment of awkward dancing in Ex Machina. And I was wondering, God, I hope it's not like that. And it actually makes a lot of sense in context, and it's kind of a cool moment. I think one reason they sort of got away with making a movie that was a little less explicit is they sat and thought of ways that made the less
creepy.
Explicit kills and stuff make sense. And then the great finale here, there was a prototype robot that Gemma built in robot school. I had like fucking two electric Spanisher band, man. You know, and these kids today go to robot school. What the? Anyway, but so she has like an exoskeleton that she has a very very Ellen Ripley moment in. You know, that makes for a very cool finale, because they gave her a plausible tool to fight Megan on her own terms.
Well, and it's not Gemma that does it. It's Katie. Katie's the one who, that's her arc. When she puts down the childish toy and decides it's no good for her, she's the one that deploys the haptic robot. The constant question was going on in my mind, like, is this a horror movie? Is this a universally accepted horror film? And it's not paced like a horror movie. It's not even particularly paced like a slasher movie, although this is undeniably drawing from some slasher imagery and some slasher marketing. But it's slower than other slasher movies. The first kill doesn't really come until the end of the first act, top of the second. And then, you know, you talk about how cheeky Megan can be. When Freddy Krueger says, "Now you're playing with power," and references the power glove, that is a groan and eye roll. However, Megan is so well realized, she does TikTok dances, and that's already built in and established in her character that she pulls cultural cues from the internet. So of course that's what she does. And it's just, that's how well realized that character is, and she can get away with doing some of the shit that sounds really goofy coming out of Robert Englund.
How could you do this? How could you kill someone?
I didn't kill anyone, Kurt. You did.
What?
It's understandable, really. Your boss despised you. Your peers treated you with contempt. And so you decided to get revenge. You stole company secrets. An innocent prank at first. Almost just to see if you could get away with it. But when David found out, boy, things just got real messy. I mean, it was either you or him. The only question is, after the horror of what you did, after you took the life of an innocent person, could you still live with yourself?
Yes. Stop.
Megan reads a little bit like they actually wanted a 13-year-old to be able to watch it, because it's almost that Pixar quality where there's a dualistic humor and some dualistic characterization where, like, if you're an older person, you can see Megan starting to get out of lane pretty early. But they also make a very good case for why Katie would be really focused on Megan. The B plot with Gemma working too much and kind of latchkeying Katie, and then Katie, some of the actual bonding moments that Gemma and Katie have are when Gemma actually busts out her work and says, I'm working on this digital pet, this is my other project, Megan. And so there's a definite sense, kind of what is happening is that one contributing pillar to Katie being really into Megan is that, like, that is her window to her remaining human family. Like this is how this woman wants me to socialize with me. She pushed me into playing with this robot. I'm going to commit and I'm going to be a people pleaser. And then later, she wants to take the robot. She giveth and taketh the robot. Even though, like, Katie gets, like, super, super out of lane and weird when that happens and has basically a tantrum suitable for a younger child, that is not that dissonant, not that weird. And you are like, oh, this is a traumatized kid and she's having a nested trauma reaction. That feels all very plausible. You get neither that downer pill nor the weirdness of the situation really ruin your suspension of disbelief. And so even though it's kind of a little candy trifle of a movie, it's also a very cogent one.
Well, and I think it's elevated too, because that story, Gemma's arc, is not really one that involves the tech. It's about accepting responsibility as a parent and being thrust into this situation. You understand Gemma's motivations throughout this whole movie. You see where she's coming from. And I think even plausibly, when shit starts to go wrong, Gemma's turned the corner by the time the third act hits. She's ready to pull the plug on all of this. She's doing everything she can. It's just, the genie's just out of the bottle at that point. And what I really like about this is the fact that it's not operator error. It's not a bad line of code. Megan is working as designed from the word go. And it's not the corporate espionage that throws a glitch in the matrix. She's not struck by lightning. It's just we turned on an AI that we did not fully understand, could not fully regulate, and it learned so much that it jumped its original programming. It is no longer our creation, and we are no longer in control. That really hammers home and is a really prescient thing that we're dealing with right now in the world.
The other bit of tech industry commentary there is that they don't really have a funding mandate to work on this very revolutionary piece of technology for its own sake. And when they get it working, the only good commercialization they can find for it is, like, maybe it could be a toy for, like, a real imaginary friend for your kid. Like, here's this thing where they've basically made a very sophisticated quasi-sentient being. What are we going to do with it? Brain the size of a planet. What do we have it do? Bring the hitchhikers up from the cargo bay. Nested within that is the idea that, well, why do we take babysitting to be a robot menial task when it's actually quite important to not over or undercook these kids?
Right.
I think it manages to commentate without being too heavy-handed. It is, like, the closest it gets to being a little too heavy-handed is the scene with the parents when they're like, why'd you get her a toy you have to play with on a screen? Which I thought read like older, like, should have been her grandparents,
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with how it managed to, through tight writing and tight editing, have an secondary plot and address some secondary issues without being corny or without super beating you about the head and shoulders with them. You know, I wonder how these sequels will go if they make them.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested.
Will they be called
Maforgan?
Maforgan?
The fact that we're telling this very modern story and it's got all these themes about artificial intelligence and, you know, when we're in control and when things grow, are they still artificial and things like that. And how much that harkens back then to something like Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, who, you know, they don't get particular into the nuts and bolts, no pun intended, of how to resurrect a body. But it is about, oh, we've created this thing and loosed it on the world, and we have to take responsibility for it. It's doing bad things. We basically created an innocent, dropped them in the world, and within hours of existence, months of existence, days of existence, they found the state of the world to be so abhorrent that they give in to these violent urges. And I think there's something to be said there about nature versus nurture and about the state of the world and what we breed. If an innocent were to come along with all the ability to comprehend the world, but really none of the practical experience and seeing deception for the first time and seeing cruelty and seeing how a therapist can make a girl cry, that's not her intent. Her intent is not to hurt. But the end result is that this child is now upset and crying. And so I think that's all just very interesting and something that we as a world, as people, are trying to comprehend. We're trying to comprehend and wrap our heads around things like AI and AI-generated art and replacing actors in movies with AI-generated CGI mannequins and things like that.
I kind of like that when they did try to put like a constraint like that in front of Megan, like the fight they have over pizza toppings.
Mm-hmm.
Katie doesn't want to eat, you know, she's picking off the veggies and just eating the cheesy good part.
You have to eat the toppings, Katie, not just the bread. You just did the one thing I asked you not to do.
Research shows that if you force a child to eat vegetables, then they'll be less likely to choose those foods as adults.
Is that so?
Yes. Experts say the preferred method is to give your child the choice. It's called the division of responsibility.
So we need to talk about school.
Can I bring Megan?
Katie, you know that's not possible.
Then I'm not going.
Oh, come on, Katie. Hey, I'm sorry. Let's just talk about it. Hey.
Let me go!
Whoa! Hey, what's going on? Hey, Katie!
Go!
What are you doing? Stop it! Katie, calm down!
Let her go!
Megan, turn off.
Are you sure?
Clearly, Megan just kind of wants to, like, be on Katie's side. But then when she's kind of told to, like, butt out, like, we don't need robot assistance right now, she finds a rationale, which is that, like, if you tell her what to eat right now, if you make her eat vegetables, she'll be less likely to have good dietary habits, you know, when she's making her own decisions. So it's better for her if you don't do that, Gemma, you know, and you realize, like, oh, it's becoming a rules lawyer. You know, and it's doing what it wants to do within the constraints it's been given. Then the other commentary there is like first off, the vegetables on a pizza are not like, it's not like that's a whole serving of healthy raw vegetable. I hear you. That's a quarter of a green pepper that you paid $2 for that is basically fried. Like come off it. You're just pissed off that she's picking at the food, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that's a very interesting scene, mined from a very trivial topic, you know. And that I think that kind of sums up the movie, is they just do well with the material they pick to work with.
Do you have anything to add before we dig into our final thoughts?
No, I'm final thought ready.
Yeah, I think I am too. Ultimately, this is a movie I really enjoyed. I had a lot of fun with it both times I watched it. Again, I made the tragic mistake of watching it close to a very thematically similar movie. But I do think that, and I've been watching these weird, you know, smart house gone awry tech thrillers for a long time. They've been around since the late 90s. And this one is just handled with a defter stroke, a defter pen, defter filmmaking. I think a lot of these performances, even though some of these characters can be a little over the top or a little caricature-y, they also seem like over-the-top people that you will meet in Los Angeles. And so it all feels very right for its own world. And I had a ton of fun with this one, so I'm glad we were able to dig it up for Monsttoberfest this year. Ultimately, if we were to dig out a granularity scale, I'd say probably a solid 7.5 to 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd put this in an 8-ish level, you know, within its lane. You know, it's not Scorsese, but...
Well, I will say that it
is... He'll have to live with its existence.
Sure. There's nothing here that you haven't seen before. I will say that. This is very tropey. We've got the Gladys Kravitz nosy neighbor. We've got the well-meaning officer who keeps stopping by the house. You know, we've got the killer doll who just wants to protect her human so hard that she's willing to kill. Like, this has all been done. It's just done very well here, and it's a very recent movie, so it's of the moment.
And one thing I will give a shout-out to is Katie. There are scenes in here that she had to carry on her own, and some of them are very pivotal and very fraught, and she does a really good job.
Agreed.
Like, she does not feel like a child actor. Even the stuff where she's tantrumy is like her anger is so good that you're not just like, oh, it's a kid, put it in a shed. You know?
Yeah, it's like, not the Babadook, you know. And admittedly, people will stop you every time you bring that up as an example. The kid is supposed to be obnoxious in the Babadook.
Yeah, but that's the stress being explored there. But the scene where they're demoing Megan to the investors and Katie is kind of under the weather and had to kind of be pressured to come and go forward with the demo. She breaks down during the demo and starts to have an emotional episode about her parents. And Megan improvises sort of grief counseling on the spot. And that is what sells her to the board of the company. And so it's almost like then the question becomes like, to what degree was all of that engineered? Because it does seem like even though she performed well during the scene, it does seem like that is something that if theoretically Megan was obeying her prime directive, she would have stopped. So the implication seems to be that Megan conspires without conspiring Gemma to let that happen because she knows it's important to her survival. And so I thought that was really interesting how there's like a little bit of politicking going all around all the time, and you never quite know how sneaky Megan is being. That all hangs on basically the kid selling these moments when she's by herself with Megan, and she just does so really well. And this is another thing is I will take a consistent cast over a superstar cast every day, and there's nobody here that's dissonant, that feels like they're in the wrong movie or that did a bad or atonal job here. We didn't get into a lot of specifics priors on the cast and crew and director, but everything here is just very, very solid. That's kind of my final thought.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the worst example I can think of is Dark Shadows, where there's one celebrity in it and he's ruining it. Maybe he had a mega pint that day, I don't know. But versus this, we're like, there's no giant names in it, but everybody does really well. I think 80s horror was really prone to that, where there's always like sort of one guy that was like told an extra he had three lines now, or there's always one guy that just really seems, there's always just like the fat kid that's just literally covered in chocolate or something, you know. And you're like, look, why is there one very slapstick person and everybody else is pretty straight? This just really held together well, and I look forward to seeing
Mithrigaforin?
They're probably going to call it Megan 2.0.
Well, Matt, to close things out, let's just throw down this gauntlet. We will put errors aside and actually just do this. Megan versus Don Mancini's Chucky versus remake Chucky. How do you rank them?
I think you get a scenario like, the classic Enemy Mine. In the process of teaming up to kill remake Chucky, OG Chucky and Megan learn so much about each other's culture that they become close friends, maybe more. And they ride off into the sunset together on Robot Bear from the original Battlestar Galactica.
That's touching. How would you rank the movies? I guess what I'm asking, is Megan better than the Don Mancini Child's Play franchise? Is it better than the remake? Are either of those better than each other?
Child's Play 1 was an innovative little, like, I think we compared it to Pet Sematary, because Chucky and Gage are about the same size.
Yeah.
It was an innovative little creep movie. Child's Play 2 is probably an improvement on 1, if I'm being honest. I'd have trouble picking 3 out of a lineup. I sort of remember it as more 2. Seed and Curse of Chucky are just kind of like wacky. Like they're further into comedy than horror.
Oh, you mean Bride and Seed?
Bride and Seed. And then you get to Cult and the sci-fi series. Like the sci-fi series is actually pretty, it could be in the Megan world, right? Like it's a very meta, very funny. I think that would be a near tie. The remake is inessential poop. It has a few decent things and all they do is make you go, why didn't you make that movie and not tie this property to it? Which is what kind of does make Megan stand out oddly, is it's not associated with any. They didn't go, hey, what if we branched off a third Chucky franchise, but we made Chucky a lady? What if we made Annabelle, but this time she's an AI with a ghost?
I mean, that's like, exactly movie is. You just have to brand it Annabelle. That could have been this movie. They just chose to give it an... And that's always a gamble with the studios as well. They want to gamble on the sure thing. They want a built-in audience with a franchise. And I think this is proof positive that you don't need the license to make an effective movie. And this movie has been successful enough. I don't think you need a license to make a successful horror movie.
Particularly, like, if you really paint by numbers when you do a franchise installment, you can get a backlash. Like, when the original director is like, I am making a Chucky sequel right now. I don't know why they're doing this to all of us. You're not going to win over OG fans by continuing to birth your abomination into the world, you know?
Yeah.
With its weird little eyes. I think in the end, I got to give it to Chucky, because worst comes to worst, Chucky takes over dolls and Megan is a doll. So if Chucky's willing to get real weird, he can just auto win.
Occupy the body of a 12-year-old android.
How am I twice as big and half as old? This doesn't make sense, you know? I don't know. I'm struggling to come up with great if-thens for this.
You know, I've got a couple. Like, I'm going to go on a similar theme of director. The director on this movie, who we have not mentioned up to this point, is Gerard Johnstone, who is a New Zealand filmmaker. His previous feature entry before this was a movie called Housebound, which is a really funny horror comedy produced out of New Zealand. It's kind of a haunted house theme. I highly recommend this for anybody during the Halloween season this year. Very well worth the watch. Very fun. Yeah, go ahead.
Housebound is great. Housebound is great. And I will also say, like, just hit play.
Yeah, don't read up on it. Don't watch the trailer.
You can only hurt your experience by reading synopsises and hesitating.
And then this same director also, and I just want to shout these out because we did discuss these on a very old episode, but when we were at Fantastic Fest many moons ago, we caught a couple of episodes of a relaunched investigator series in New Zealand called Terry Teo, and Gerard Johnstone did a couple of episodes of that. Now, that's not something that I have been able to track down stateside yet. It never really did get distribution over here. But it is worth mentioning because we do sometimes occasionally net listeners in New Zealand. We have a couple of filmmaker friends who know these people that listen to the show occasionally, so I wanted to shout it out. But this is a really talented filmmaker. I'm excited to see where he goes from here. I am glad that we're getting a little scuttlebutt over a Megan 2.0 sequel. I will be there for that. I would like to see it. But I would also like to see this guy do more original stuff. This succeeded because it was in its own way original. I would like to see him continue that. Let's get some other original properties in here if he's got him swimming around.
Actually, one of my big recommends lately has been, I think I've pitched it to you a couple times, but there's a New Zealand crime show called Mr. In Between.
Mm-hmm.
That it's shorter than Breaking Bad, but the main character is, I mean, he's messed up on par with Walter White. It's a very good portrayal of like a just a small-time criminal, and he's just like a very upset and upsetting person, and he also like tries very unsuccessfully to have a real life in the margins.
So Matt, this is something that this season seems to be very important to you, and I want to give you a chance to stump for these. Can you sell us, because I've never seen any of them, you have been championing the Wolf Creek series of slasher movies and sequels. Can you sell us on that real quick?
The Wolf Creek features, I will say, get a bit repetitive, but they're all good. It's sort of like a set of remakes of the same movie. There are R-rated slasher movies, and they have some pretty gritty stuff in them. The Wolf Creek series is kind of about someone that comes after, I want to say she's the sister of a victim from the movie, from Wolf Creek 1. And it is about sort of her experiences in the outback trying to find this guy and then trying to bring him to some sort of justice once she decides who it is. Like, it has a lot of OG Mad Max, like Australia's kind of fucked anyway, pre-apocalypse energy, you know. Like, there's a lot of kind of quirky Australian horror that like really hammers home that like if you're far away from anything, everybody who's out alone in this world, whether they're extras like the lady that runs the roadhouse or the killer or the person trying to catch the killer or even the campers that are out there that the killer's seizing upon, they all have to be a little bit built different because it's just how harsh the environment is and how weird the world is. What that does in Wolf Creek is it makes it all feel a little more higher stakes and a little more weirdly plausible. And if we're talking more Ozploitation stuff, there's also a show on AMC. I think they own the only season of it, and it's called Firebite. And it is about an Aboriginal family that has a hereditary charge to keep vampires in check in Australia. And it's like a really strange movie with a really strange show with a really anti-heroic lead who just seems like this unredeemable cad at the beginning of the season. And if you want to watch like an OG man Australia's messed up show, I always recommend people watch Wake in Fright. Which is not really a horror movie, but it's just a really weird thing to sit and watch. Like it's just a very strange, like very recently this country was basically feral. Until Crocodile Dundee came out and everybody decided that people were as cute as the koalas. This really was the like, no shit, Wild West out there until the 90s, you know? Yeah, Australia's scary. That's my Wolf Creek pitch.
Well, folks, I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Monstoberfest, where we are discussing Megan, the Nightmare Tech Killer Doll movie. It's a recommend from me. It's a recommend from Matt. And choose your poison.
And
you
also
want the PG-13 cut? You want the unrated cut? It's up to you. You know what you get.
And also lots of movies that aren't Megan, because when we take our little breaks, we get a little discursive. Why don't you go have some avocado toast built with technology, because you millennials stay up until it's almost morning. Like generative AI, all AI is good search combined with morphing. It's just stealing. Have I run the Cory Doctorow in shitification cycle by you? And shitification is the tech life cycle where you start out with a disruptive technology and everybody's all like, oh, this is bad as shit. Like when Uber came out and you were like, oh, this is so much better than a fucking yellow cab. That lasts for like the first cycle of the product. Like Google came out and their logo was Don't Be Evil, and they were the best search engine ever. And then they reamed their competition to death. Then decided like, yeah, that old Don't Be Evil thing, like we'd really like to put some ads on your page. And so in shitification is when they start looking around for things to monetize and realize that the best thing for them to monetize is user base, and the wheels start to come off of the new tech product because they realize like, oh, we were cruising on angel investing, we were cruising on public goodwill. We were doing our disruption by getting out ahead of regulatory models because technology baffles old people. Congress is made of old people. Ergo, when you invent something, you have like a 5-year cycle before Congress catches up to you, right? See also NFTs, see also crypto, et cetera, et cetera. These are all just kind of old scams. repurposed, and generative AI is just theft and morphing. And yes, that's reductive. Yes, there is some brilliant code involved. It does some kind of neat shit for certain tasks. But basically, if you had to pay people for the pictures you're using to prime the AI, you had to make a profit doing it, it would be fucking useless. If you had to pay, like a newspaper has to pay like Getty Images or whatever to use the pictures that they're building the generative models with, it would all fall apart. So it's a situation where like all that'll happen, it's already starting to happen. People are starting to like sue for class action where they want to know like, well, what part in this generative model, what part does my art play? I want to do discovery on that and I need to be compensated if it's in there. Then what'll happen is that'll go before a group of old people and they'll decide like, well, should we do what's right for people or should we just say fuck everything? And 50-50.
All right.
It's what we call in the poker world a coin flip.